This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. I'm going to start that over, Anna. My eye line was messed up because I was looking at a couple of things. Should I just go? Okay. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can now watch our TV show on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. The European Union on Wednesday signed the landmark global climate deal drafted in Paris last year at the COP21 meeting. This means that there are now enough nations that have ratified the accord to consider it a global treaty, and it will go into effect in 30 days. To mark the occasion, President Barack Obama made a televised address where he hailed, quote, a historic day in the fight to protect our planet for future generations. Obama added, if we follow through on the commitments that this Paris Agreement embodies, history may well judge it as a turning point for our planet. But the grand announcement comes as 100 or so lives have been claimed by a massive hurricane hitting Haiti and bearing down on the U.S.'s southeastern coast. Hurricanes are expected to become much stronger and more deadly in a warming climate. My guest is Steve Hirsch. He is the senior attorney with Sierra Club's International Climate and Energy Campaign. Welcome to the program, Steve.
Good morning, Sonali. Thanks for having me.
So first, let's talk about the good news and the fact that this Paris Accord was very hard fought, many, many years of repeat United Nations meetings to even come to an agreement on this particular document. And now over this past year, nations have continued to ratify it. And I understand that it needed 55% of nations that contributed to 55% of warming to ratify it before it became a treaty. And that threshold was just met this week. Is that accurate?
That is correct. The European Union and several of its member states, along with Canada and a couple other countries, submitted their papers of ratification yesterday, and that put the agreement over the 55% threshold. So all the criteria for entering into force are now in place, and it will become live in 30 days.
And of course, it's notable that the United States ratified it in April. So the U.S. actually was a little bit earlier than even some of the European nations.
That's right. The United States and China formally joined the agreement at the same time back in.
So the Paris Agreement was, as I said, very, very hard fought. How do you, however, assess its strength? Because even when it was signed, there were massive protests outside the halls of the COP21 meeting on the streets of Paris saying that it's just not enough. There's a sort of half-hearted commitment to 2 degrees warming when we know that it's really a 1.5 degrees threshold that is the difference between, you know, species annihilation and survival.
Yeah, so there's a lot there to address. So there is a 2-degree commitment in the agreement, but there's also a commitment to work to achieve 1.5 degrees as the maximum level of global average temperature rise. So that is in the agreement. It was hard fought in the sense that it took it's the end product of years of negotiations. But by the time we got to that end, I wouldn't say it was hard fought in the sense that it does a remarkable job of bridging over some of the long-term political fault lines that have held back the negotiations for years. And in particular, what I'm talking about is the fracture line between the developed and the developing countries, which had been a sort of consistent feature since the original Framework Convention on Climate Change was adopted. So the Paris Agreement was able to give both sides what they felt like they needed to move forward, and it unites all countries in a common framework. And by doing so, it provides a very strong basis for all countries to move forward collectively.
So what does it mean for the plan, for the treaty, if you will, to go into effect in 30 days. That means, I understand, November 4th, which is interestingly just 4 days before the U.S. election, that has two major candidates, one who has pledged, you know, to actually put this into effect, and the other who basically denies that there's global warming. What does it mean for the U.N. to actually have this go into effect? Does it only apply to those countries who have signed it?
So it is a huge deal for it to go into effect now. When the Paris Agreement was negotiated, when it was agreed back in December last year, the conventional wisdom was that it would enter into force probably in 2020 or 2018 at the earliest. So we were thinking then in terms of years that it would take to enter into force. Instead, it's taken a matter of 10 months. And what that shows is the unprecedented political momentum behind the Paris Agreement. So we've, in addition to the US, we have China, India, Brazil, the European Union, and almost 70 other countries have already joined the agreement. So far sooner than anybody expected.
I want to play for you and our audience some excerpts of President Obama addressing the nation this week in response to the threshold that was passed that now makes the Paris Accord law, you know, sets into effect the 30-day period before it becomes the sort of global treaty that it is. Here's Obama.
10 months ago in Paris, I said before the world that we needed a strong global agreement to reduce carbon pollution and to set the world on a low carbon course. The result was the Paris Agreement. Now, the Paris Agreement alone will not solve the climate crisis. Even if we meet every target embodied in the agreement, we'll only get to part of where we need to go. But make no mistake, this agreement will help delay or avoid some of the worst consequences of climate change. And by sending a signal that this is going to be our future, a clean energy future, it opens up the floodgates for businesses and scientists and engineers to unleash high-tech, low-carbon investment and innovation at a scale that we've never seen before. So this gives us the best possible shot to save the one planet we've got.
And that's President Obama speaking in front of the White House this week after the EU and some other nations signed the Paris Accord. Now, Steve, he said that even if we meet every target that the Paris Accord sets out, it doesn't necessarily mean we stave off climate change. It just means we might avoid some of the worst aspects of climate change. Isn't that true that we really need to go even above and beyond that the Paris Accord is sort of a lower limit?
Yes. So the Paris Accord is clearly an essential step in moving forward in the global fight against climate change, but it's by no means sufficient. So if countries were to do everything that they said they'd do when they put their intended contributions on paper in Paris, we would achieve something on the order of 2.7 degrees of global warming. So that's obviously far above the two degree target, let alone the 1.5 degree target. So all countries need to do more. There's no question about
and,
that.
And NASA scientist James Hansen, who's been one of the leading climate activists for a very long time, he also said the Paris Agreement is not enough. It's good, but it's not enough. We certainly do have to go further. Now, what about specifically the U.S. and China? U.S. and China are the top two polluters. How would this agreement and how would the U.S. and China, in adhering to this agreement, change their behavior? How is this going to change the way in which those nations operate day to day that actually have an impact on our atmosphere?
Well, as you know, the United States has committed to do a number of things, and the Obama administration has taken a number of administrative actions to reduce our emissions. China, as well, is doing a number of things. So they've committed to peak their emissions by 2030. If you look at the amount of renewable energy that they're looking to bring online, it's by 2030, it's almost as much as the entire electricity grid in the United States. So they're making massive commitments, putting in massive efforts to not only limit their use of coal, but also to greatly expand their use of renewable energy. And there's, I think, another dimension to this that's important to note. It's not just the commitments that are made on both sides. It's the ways in which both countries taking action changes the political dynamics. So in the United States, for example, one of the huge impediments to taking action is that the fossil fuel industry and the other industries that benefit from a high carbon status quo, and also the politicians who defend those interests, have been able to say, look, why should we act when China's not acting? The fact that the US and China are not only both now acting and that we're actually collaborating in a number of ways takes that argument off the table. It really puts the lie to the argument that the fossil fuel industry has made, that either we can't do anything because China isn't doing anything, or if we do anything, it won't matter anyway because China will just continue to grow their emissions.
I sort of wonder, Steve, if Donald Trump becomes president. I mean, there are so many things that are in jeopardy if Donald Trump does become president. Is this one of the big ones? Is the Paris Accord in danger if we have a Trump presidency?
The Paris Accord itself is not in danger. U.S. climate action certainly is in danger. And, you know, we've heard a lot of bluster from Donald Trump that he would cancel the Paris Agreement. A couple things to keep in mind. First, the way the agreement is written, even if he wanted to pull us out, that would not take effect until after he's left office. There's a sort of cooling off period written into the agreement as to how long it takes to take effect, and it would be after Trump left office. So that's the first thing to take note of. The second thing is it would be a colossal diplomatic error on the part of Trump or any U.S. administration to withdraw from the Paris Agreement, not only because of the adverse effects it would have on the global effort to combat climate change, but also on the adverse effects it would have on the U.S. ability to achieve any of its diplomatic objectives. You have to understand how much diplomatic energy went into this agreement, how important it is to other countries in the world that it succeeds, and you have to think about how would they respond if the U.S. were to withdraw. My sense is what they would do is they would make it extremely difficult for the U.S. to achieve its other diplomatic interests. We just wouldn't see the same level of cooperation that we see now when Obama has built up goodwill on issues of global concern like climate change. So from a strategic perspective, even if you don't care about climate, like Donald Trump obviously doesn't, it would be a huge mistake for him to pull out of the Paris.
Well, we'll see what happens in the next few weeks here in the U.S. And I'm wondering, Steve, if we should be looking at what's happening right now in Haiti, in Florida. In Haiti in particular, 100 people or so have died. Hurricane Matthew is a Category 4 hurricane, 145 miles per hour winds. We haven't had that kind of hurricane in Haiti, aimed at Haiti since the 1950s. Should we be looking at such strong and violent natural disasters as hurricanes, as warning signs, you know, as this is the kind of thing we can expect much more of in a warming climate?
Yeah. These kinds of intense weather events are certainly a harbinger of things that come under global warming scenarios. And the thing about Haiti, which is important to understand also, is how poor a country it is and how vulnerable it is to the adverse impacts of climate change. And that's generally true around the world, that poorer countries, less developed countries, are more vulnerable to the impacts of a changing climate.
And they, of course, have the least to do with contributing to the climate crisis.
That's right. That's absolutely right. So there's a huge justice and equity component to how the world responds to climate change, that the people who are on the front lines and are most vulnerable are not the people who have contributed the most to the problem.
Which was a big issue within the COP meetings, right?
It's been a big issue for a long time. And one of the things that is important about the Paris Agreement is that in addition to creating a framework for reducing emissions, it also creates frameworks for helping countries become more resilient to the potential impacts of a changing climate. And also, which is new, it also advances a framework for helping countries actually deal with the loss and damage impacts that occur. How that mechanism will work needs to be fleshed out in further meetings, but there's a recognition now that it's important not only to help countries become more resilient, but actually to figure out how to handle the losses and damages that are occurred by things like hurricanes.
Finally, Steve, what's next on the international front? I understand that there is a meeting coming up in Marrakesh, Morocco, that the UN is also hosting the signing of the COP21 agreement, or basically the agreement happening last year wasn't the end of the line for UN meetings on climate change, right?
No, not at all. They'll continue for some time. There's a lot on the agenda. There's nothing that will be as high profile as the signing of the Paris Agreement, but there are a couple of important things to watch. So, for example, the Paris Agreement, we have to figure out how to implement the Paris Agreement. The Paris Agreement agreed on a number of provisions that need further decisions to spell out. So, for example, they kind of need a rule book on things like they agreed that there would be transparency and reporting on emissions reductions. Well, how's that going to work? They need to come to some common agreements on how the reporting will take place. They agreed that every 5 years there'd be a process by which countries increase their commitments to reduce emissions. There needs to be rules on how those processes work. Things like that, the sort of administrative nuts and bolts on how the Paris Agreement will work.
Right. Well, Steve, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website for the Sierra Club.
It's www.sierraclub.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our site later today. Thank you so much, Steve.
Okay, thank you, Sonali. I enjoyed it.
Steve Hirst is a senior attorney with the Sierra Club's International Climate and Energy Campaign. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Twitter at twitter.com/RU with Sonali.